Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is episode 52 of Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Nintendo Indirect. In our first segment, Zach, Patrick, and Scott are going to discuss the things that Nintendo didn't answer at the big Wii U press event, and then after that, Scott and Nate are going to spend a little time reminiscing about Animal Crossing. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. Today, I am with Zachary Miller.
What's up?
And Patrick Barnett.
Hello, everyone.
And I guess as a companion piece to our Wii U segment last week, where we just talked about everything we learned, this segment is going to be a little bit about what we don't know, what wasn't announced so far, what's something that's really interesting to us that we just don't know anything about yet. And what are things we hope we discover before the system launches that may or may not influence our buying decisions. Probably not us three, it sounds like, but for other people out there who might be waiting to know a little bit more about the Wii U before they run out and go buy it, which yeah. At this point they probably won't be able to find it.
I was going to say they're going to end up waiting in line.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Zach, I think you kind of had the most... complaints after the Wii U conference last week.
Complaints? Not complaints. Criticisms.
There's a difference. Well, talk a little bit about what you were hoping to hear Thursday and what you didn't hear.
Okay. What I was hoping to hear most of all was I wanted them to spend more time talking about the online infrastructure and less time on the TV. Because they spent like 20 minutes on that TV demonstration. And after about five, I was like, I get it. It's a shell program. Move on. But, you know, they didn't talk at all about what kind of browser it's going to support. I don't really care, but that would be, you know, I think diagnostic of their online competence. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know if there's going to be like an XBLA or PSN type friends list where you can just, you don't have to go to a different menu. You can just see who's online and what they're playing all the time. You can join their games. You can send them messages from the home screen and you don't have to go into Swapnote.
Yes.
To send somebody a message. I wanted them to talk about the Wii U version of Swapnote, which I guess is a part of Miiverse. According to E3, but I wanted to know if they've improved it, because as we've all experienced, Swapnote as it currently stands is a little bit broken.
Right.
Or maybe half-assed is the proper term.
And I always like to clarify that. I mean, our situation's a little different because we have a lot of 3DS friends just by, you know, virtue of being a part of this site and sure. A part of the community of this site. So we have a lot of friends and there's a lot of notes going back and forth. I think Swapnote would work great for just the average person who has like three or four 3DS friends.
That's true,
but
yeah.
Maybe that's not actually so average.
In their cases, you know? They don't fill up that Swapnote queue where we have to clear out like 10 or so notes every 10 minutes.
Yeah, which is just... absolutely terrible. Yeah. So.
I spent a half hour deleting notes the other night.
No, I'm so far backed up, like probably 4 months. So,
oh God,
I'm just not even going to try.
Every time you open it up, you download 20 notes.
Yeah. You know, someone on Twitter, Danny Bivens, fellow staff member, was talking about how he was just going to delete Swapnote because he waited too long and he wanted to clear out the notes, and he deleted the app and re-downloaded it, but it didn't clear out his notes. And then someone clued him in that what he needs to do is go actually into his memory on his system and delete the extra data for Swapnote, and then that will clear it out, and then he can re-download it and start fresh.
Well, if he did that, wouldn't he lose all of his stationery?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd start over. Yeah,
I've thought about deleting Swapnote, and I put that out on Twitter one time, and somebody said, "Where are we going to get 3D girly figure pictures?" I said, "A camera? Where? A good camera?"
Do you still do that occasionally?
Once in a while, I'll still throw one out there. Yeah,
I mean, you probably ran through them all by now, right?
No, I've actually I'm on my second run through because a lot of people said, "Please show them again. I wasn't your friend the first time." So, and I've gotten quite a few more since that first run through. So I've been throwing them out every once every week or so.
That's incredible.
Sometimes I have to do one girl more than once because sometimes she has an alternate costume or no costume at all. So, you know.
And you see what's scary is Zach right now, for those who don't know, his wife is in another city in Alaska and will be for the next handful of months for school.
Yeah.
But the scary thing is this was Zach's life while living with his wife. So I can only imagine now that she's gone, like what you're doing with your curly figures. Nothing necessarily horrible, but like just switching their outfits, talking to them, maybe trying to feed them.
Talking to them, yes, talking to them.
He has one of those creepy kitchen tables.
I moved some of them out to the front room.
Yeah, they're all around you at the kitchen table. Yeah. You guys are all talking about your days, how work was.
Yes.
That's great.
But anyway,
let's get back to the matter at hand. So basically, you wanted to know a whole lot about the online infrastructure.
Yeah, and a big part of the online infrastructure is going to be Miiverse.
Yeah.
And, you know, you watch the press conference and they talk about Miiverse, but no more detailed than Miiverse is a thing that exists.
They did right. the same thing at E3. They just kept name-dropping Miiverse, but without going into very much detail.
They did. Yeah. Well, at E3, at least, they said it's going to have swap note, it's going to have tips for games, and I think there was even less of that at the Nintendo Direct.
Oh, for
sure.
It was more
like, hey, remember Miiverse? It's still a thing. But they didn't talk about, will it all be ready? By the time it comes out, will the swap note functionality work? Will the game integration work? How integrated will games other than New Super Mario Brothers Wii be? Will it work with Nintendo Land? Will it work with, you know, when Pikmin 3 comes out? Will it work with that? You know, they didn't really actually talk about Miiverse. That kind of bugged me. It kind of makes me think that maybe they were overshooting a little bit at E3, and that I'm pretty sure they'll tone it down for the launch. It might get better with patches released later, but I'm just not expecting great things with online, persistent online functionality off the Wii U, you know, when I open the box. And that disappoints me. It doesn't surprise me, but I mean, look at the 3DS. The 3DS wasn't the system it is today until December 2011.
Yeah.
And that's horrifying.
Well, I will say, and to play the role of Neil, who would just like yell at you now and like bring up multiple instances of where Nintendo's clarified this, I don't have the memory that Neil has. he's great at this kind of stuff. But I do believe they have said that this stuff should be running day one. Now, I know it didn't on the 3DS.
I know. They apologized for the 3DS before, Zach.
And the 3DS did have third-party games that used online.
It did.
But I have to think that, I mean, with this being a home console, it's their step into, like, being equal with the 360 and the PS3. Mm-hmm. It just, you can't get away with not having your online infrastructure up and running. I mean, the Wii didn't maybe have games that you could play online, but day one, the eShop was there.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, or not the eShop, but you know, whatever they called it on the Wii.
Shop channel. You could download a few NES games. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you could add friends via friend codes, and you could send messages from the message board.
You could add friend codes and hope they added you and hope they connected.
So the online infrastructure, limited though it was in place for the Wii when that launched. So I have to think with the Wii U, it'll be up and running. But I do agree that it would be nice to know some more details. I mean, Miiverse sounds pretty interesting, and I like the idea of, like, this sort of visual display of, like, what your friends and what other people in the world are playing and doing. Like, that sounds all really cool and neat. But I do agree that there's so many questions about just friendless. I mean, just as simple as that.
Yeah.
I mean, Nintendo's just been so afraid of doing something like that. And I think the 3DS is a step in the right direction.
It is.
But I do agree that the Wii U just needs to take it a step further. And the other big thing I think people want to know about is, like, unified accounts.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yep.
I mean, that was going to be one of my big things, the eShop itself. Like, what exactly, how exactly will it work? Will it tie in with your 3DS so you can make that account, like, unified account system between both your 3DS and your Wii U?
Will it tie in with your Club Nintendo account?
That's the big thing. Like, I think you should be able to do all the Club Nintendo stuff just from the Wii U now. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason not to. You know, there could be a I don't know if they're still referred to things as channels in the Wii U, maybe not, but it should be a, you know, functionality built in right there. You just go to it. You can, you know, I mean, you can have
a code and there you go.
I mean, it would be easy. Do your surveys right from the gamepad and stuff. That would be really cool. But I do agree, like, a unified account would just go so far and, like, making Nintendo appear like they've really got it with the online stuff. Because, I mean, like, okay, great, you can transfer your stuff from the Wii to the Wii U, but, like, you have to have both systems hooked up and running. You have to have an SD card to swap between them. They have to both be online. I mean, it's just crazy that if you could just log into your account, you could just download what you want, you know? I understand for save data, you might still have to do something like this, but just for actual, like, getting the licenses to the games.
Yeah, just every other company on the planet has figured this out. You know, Xbox and PlayStation and Steam and probably other more primitive consoles. I can't think of any right now, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nintendo's really married to this, tying the console to the license, which is so bizarre. And, you know, poor Johnny Metz had to deal with this firsthand when he lost his 3DS. He couldn't just buy a 3DS. He had to call up a Nintendo rep and get a police report and send it to him. And then they didn't actually let him re-download the games. They just gave him a lot of eShop money.
Yeah, that's right.
The only licenses they renewed were his ambassador licenses.
Right.
So weird.
It is. It just seems like more trouble than it should be.
Right? It seems like more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah. This day and age, it shouldn't be that complicated to re-download software that you've purchased and downloaded. I mean, it seems, with hurdles like that, it would almost encourage piracy, I think. I don't know how easy that is in the 3DS compared to how it was on the DS. But still, you know, it's just not very user-friendly.
Right. And here's another question about the eShop. When I turn on the Wii U, will the next day after I've slept and gone to work. So, no, it's Sunday morning. Well, whatever. Anyway, when I turn it on and go to the eShop, the Wii U eShop, do you think all of the Nintendo channel or Nintendo shop channel games will be on the eShop?
No. I don't think it right away.
Do you think that's the direction they'll go? Will I eventually be able to buy, you know, Gunstar Heroes on the Wii U shop channel?
Maybe. It's weird because I think it's been confirmed that you're not going to be able to play your VC and WiiWare games on the Wii U gamepad. So why would
I believe it boots into Wii mode.
Yeah.
When you play a virtual console game from your Wii. Mm. That's weird.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the Wii U shop will be an entirely separate thing. And I wonder
like how the 3DS eShop, it's reselling like virtual console NES games.
Yeah. Like it has its own emulation.
Yeah. Like, am I going to be buying The Legend of Zelda for a third time on my Wii U?
Exactly. If you don't want to boot it into Wii mode, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wonder about that. I really do.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff right there. Are they just going to re-release games that were already on the Wii eShop as, Wii U eShop titles? Like you said, like maybe with increased functionality, like the ability to play on the gamepad and stuff like that. It just seems stupid enough to be possible, you know?
This is so stupid, it might actually happen.
Right. Or on the other hand, will all virtual console games just continue to boot in Wii mode? So, like, let's say Wii U comes out, and then, like, a month later they release, I don't know, like, Yoshi's Island or something on the, you know, on the virtual console. It probably won't happen, but let's say they do. Like, will that boot in Wii mode regardless of where you download it? You know, are they just going to keep virtual console games using Wii emulation? You know, I just don't know. But yeah,
good question.
But when we found out that you couldn't play these, I mean, we're still not 100% sure, but that seems to be how it was worded, that you can't stream these to the gamepad.
Right.
I mean, that just seems like such a missed opportunity. I mean, I was really excited about being able just to like sit on the couch and play Super Metroid or something, you know, like while my girlfriend's watching TV or, you know, those are the kinds of games that would be perfect for the gamepad.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they have announced, some Wii U Shop games like Mighty Switch Force HD and Trine 2, and if there are other ones, I haven't been paying attention. But Mutant Muds Deluxe.
Mutant Muds Deluxe,
that'll be good. But I think Mutant Muds Deluxe is probably just mutant muds with the extra levels that they're going to let you download for free on the 3DS.
It's the same thing with Mighty Switch Force. Which is fine.
Mighty Switch Force, though, has completely different graphics.
That's true.
And it'll have new, from what I hear, it'll have new bonus features that are exclusive to the Wii U. But either way, actually, I don't think Mutant Muds would be as appealing if it had, like, HD, you know, animated graphics. That game is perfect as it is. That's neither here nor there. Those have been the only games they've released for the, or they've said are going to be on the eShop. Not the only ones. I'm sure there are more, but those are the only ones I know off the top of my head.
There's they haven't Nano announced. Assault.
Oh, Nano Assault, yeah, right. Assault. Trying to, I said that one, yeah.
A Runner 2.
Runner 2, I don't even know what that is.
Like by Bit Trip Runner, you know those games?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Chasing Aurora, Tokitori 2.
Okay. Well, the point is they haven't announced any kind of virtual console service.
No, they haven't.
Not NES, Super Nintendo, N64. I think we'd all like GameCube to be on there. So, you know, I'd like to hear about what their virtual console plans are going to be.
Well, it sounds like if there is going to be this, like, Wii mode on the Wii U, where that's where it runs, like, Wii software as well as virtual console games, then that's the perfect time to start releasing GameCube games, because then it will just run in Wii mode as if the Wii was playing the GameCube disc. It seems totally logical that they could do it. I mean, if the Wii U has the ability to basically just turn into a Wii, then bam, like, they don't have to worry about, like, trying to figure out how to get the GameCube games to work on Wii U. Like,
very
it's built
true.
Into the Wii software, so.
Very true.
Yeah, so, or the Wii operating system. So, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see. I've got no problem with this, like, quote-unquote Wii mode. I just wish it would come to the gamepad. That's my only, like,
and maybe it will in a patch someday.
Yeah, who knows? And, I mean, like we said, we haven't had it 100% confirmed, and it seems like it shouldn't be that difficult
to do. I know.
If
it can stream, you know, HD video to your gamepad, it should be able to stream Mario Brothers.
Just stream whatever the heck's on the TV screen to the gamepad. You know, like it doesn't seem like it should be that difficult. But who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? You know, I mean, it could be part of the fact that it does run in this quote-unquote Wii mode, you know, to save them creating new emulation software for the Wii U. So once it's in Wii mode, it loses all, like, Wii U functionality.
That's
so
probably what
can't.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so. But that's a bummer. I hope they can work something out with that, because that's a feature I was really looking forward to.
Yeah, me too.
But while we're talking about the eShop and all that great stuff, let's read a listener submission that we had. This came from Facebook or Twitter?
This one was from Twitter.
Okay, this was from Twitter. It was from our good old friend Donald Mick Shaman. You know, he probably has a couple other names in there I'm forgetting.
From Nintendo Free Radio, if I am not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah, local, or I guess, you know, another podcast legend like ourselves.
Indeed.
And his question, is the eShop going to use money like the 3DS, or do we have Nintendo points evolving to Wii U Shop points again?
I'm sure it'll be money.
Yeah, it'll go money.
After 3DS, I'm sure it'll be money.
Which has been so nice.
Oh, right.
So nice.
Especially that button that says only needed funds.
Oh, that's the best.
I don't even know why the other options are even there.
Yeah, you can pay exactly what you need, or you could put $50 on your account. I mean, we're just saying we're not going to stop you if you just want to give us $50 now for the $3 you owe. We're not going to stop you.
No.
But yeah, I don't see any reason to go back to points now.
I don't know why they had points in the first place.
I think they were just following Xbox's, like, precedent. I mean, Xbox 360 launched with Microsoft points, and it was like, well, I guess that's what you do.
Yeah.
And then the PS3 came right out of the gate with just charging, you know, actual dollar values. And I guess with 3DS, they thought that was more convenient. At least with the Wii, it was like 100 points is a dollar.
Yeah, that's true.
So the conversions were easy. 360 is just
I have no idea how much I'm spending when I buy an XBLA game.
Yeah, it's like a game 1,600 points. That's $22. Like, what? I don't understand.
They're not called Xbox points. They're called Allards. And Nintendo points are Reggie's.
Oh, yeah.
No.
What about PS3?
That uses money.
Oh, I guess that's true. So no snazzy nickname
for that.
It's
called Dollars and Cents, yo.
Called the Narrow. But yeah, definitely it's going to use. Definitely going to use real money.
Yeah.
No, without a doubt. So. But yeah, I'm trying to think, like, well, Patrick, did you have anything else that, like, apart from unified accounts that wasn't talked about that you're still curious about?
The one thing I really want to know about is the home screen itself. Like, how is everything tied together? Like, at E3, we saw that that screen where it was just, like, pictures of, like, I guess different games. Like, there was a Mario, a Boo, a Yoshi, I think, and the Miis were just gathering around it.
Yeah.
And is that, like, a Miiverse screen or is that a home screen? I don't know.
I think that was a Miiverse screen.
Okay.
But well, I wonder if that is the home screen.
Right.
That's
when
what
you,
I'm thinking.
Right. When you launch the game or when you launch the Wii U, like, is that just the screen you arrive at?
Right.
You know, you just see all your icons for your various programs and games and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's Miis surrounding them showing what everyone's playing. Like, I'm fine with that. That seems functional enough.
Yeah. I wonder if it become an issue, like, how much can you actually get on the screen? Like, is it a good use of space? I don't know.
I really like something the 3DS's like setup.
Yeah, with the folders and everything now, and the 3DS makes it perfect.
I just wish you could name the folders more than a letter. But
I've gotten to the point where I'm trying to spell out words with my folders.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so yeah, that's a good point.
If they bring over the 3DS's like home screen to the Wii U, I think I'd be fine with that.
That's all I want.
I think that'd be kind of ugly for the home console. I think you need a little bit more than that. It's got to have a little, like, a little flash to it.
And pizzazz.
Also the opportunity to, like, advertise things.
What they did is up on the big television screen, they put that Miiverse screen and down on the gamepad itself.
Look at that.
They did the 3DS.
That would be fine. Yeah. But I think that both the PS3 and 360 are really good about, you know, having your space where your games and different settings are and stuff, but then on the side, off to the sides and stuff, and across the top, having, like, advertisements and stuff you might be interested in and things like that. And I think Nintendo should do something like that as well.
Sure.
I mean, how great would it be if you booted up and, like, you know, you're going to go play New Super Mario Brothers, you know, U or whatever, and then off to the side, you know, there's an advertisement for Trine 2, which just came out, you know, or something like that. And you click it and it takes you right to the eShop, right to its page, and you can just buy it and download it.
That would be nice.
I think when I boot up my PS3, the first thing that comes up on the cross media bar is, like, what's new?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's what Nintendo needs to implement if they really want to get serious about their downloadable software.
Their eShops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've got to use that space like that. So, but I agree. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I didn't expect to hear at this event. I kind of went into it knowing it was just going to be like launch details and that kind of stuff. And so in that way, I was satisfied when it was all over.
I assume they wouldn't talk much about it, but I was hoping at least they'd put like a screenshot up on
image,
on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, they could get as much information out as possible through this one big event that everyone was going to be watching.
Right. Sure. But I do agree that these are the kinds of things that should have been talked about as far back as E3. I mean, there was no reason not to spend some time on this kind of stuff, like just the hardware at a functional level. I mean, just like you said, we don't know what it does when you turn it on. You know?
Are you saying a half hour on Nintendo Land was too much?
Maybe a tad. Maybe they split that in half.
Half hour on Nintendo Land, and then go to the developer roundtable where you talk about Nintendo Land.
Yeah,
that was pretty great.
But do you guys think we'll get another Nintendo Direct before launch of the system?
No,
with these kind of details,
I think we will.
I don't.
Zach,
think
you
we
say
will.
No. Well, Patrick, why do you think we will?
Well, there's so much they have to reveal yet, like the internet or like the online play, online functionality, eShop, home screen type of stuff. Are they just going to reveal that through press releases? Probably not. Best way to show that stuff off is by actually showing it via Nintendo Direct.
You know, the other interesting thing, Patrick, reminds me of a good point, an interesting point. Nintendo hasn't announced any online games.
No.
I mean,
that's true.
Miiverse, you could argue, is something of an online function.
There was just
like
an interview
Mario.
With Bill Trinan with 1UP, and he said that Nintendo themselves are focusing on that Miiverse interaction with their games rather than online play currently.
Right. Well, I'm surprised they didn't say, by the way, we're making an online Mario Kart, you know, or I'm actually really surprised that Pikmin 3 doesn't have leaderboards.
Oh, it might. We don't know.
Yeah, it might. You're right.
Plus, Pikmin 3 is not coming out till next year anyway.
Yeah.
So there's time to add
that.
Yeah,
the launch window is half a year now or something.
You love that launch window.
I love that launch window.
That was one of the first things I think you tweeted, was it not?
Yeah, it was. Why not make it 6 months?
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I mean, like I said, I think this could be Nintendo's opportunity to really come out of the game. So, you know, go, we're serious about online gaming. And there was that quote from Reggie that I tweeted to you.
Yeah, I like that quote.
That Rich from IGN tweeted something along the lines that, like, at this point, online, like, gaming
is like
the air we breathe or something like that. And he said, like, we're going to give you that air. So,
well, Call of Duty, that's coming launch day. And yeah, that has to be online.
It has to be.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that launch day?
Yes, it's
launch day.
Supposedly, I read somewhere, we talked about this last week, I can't remember where I read this, but it might even launch before the system launches.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
Call of Duty comes out like 4 days before the Wii U is supposed to launch.
It'll just be on the shelf with the other ones.
I saw that with a whole bunch of games. I don't remember which ones they were, but they all had like November 13th release dates.
Oh, that's funny. Well, it you know, for people like me, if you're really excited about, like, I don't know, Metal Gear 4, you might buy the game before you have the system. So, you know, that could work. That could be fine. Especially
I've got no problem.
Activision is all like, look at what you can do on the Wii U version.
Yeah.
That's not going to be on the other two.
Yep.
You can track your stats in real time on the gamepad, and my friends would all buy a Wii U just for that.
Yeah, but so that online functionality for Call of Duty has to be in place. Otherwise, that version is just not going to sell because that's the draw.
That's Call of Duty,
Right. If you don't have that, you're releasing it to fail. I mean, there's just no point.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would have spent so much time on the game last Thursday if that wasn't going to be in place.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I mean, where the developers are there showing it off themselves. I mean,
it looked good.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like Call of Duty.
Sure.
You can shoot the fuck out of people, so I guess it works. But I think before launch, I hope there's another Nintendo Direct, and they will show a little bit of the online stuff, and like we're talking about, even as much as just a menu.
I hope you're right. What the thing looks like
when you turn it on. But I think this is a big point for them and a big opportunity to garner a lot of interest from, you know, quote unquote hardcore gamers.
Sure.
I mean, I've heard people on Twitter say, you know, they're interested in these games, but is the online going to work the way it does for other consoles?
Right.
And for these third party games that are multi-platform games, that has to be in place because they're already at a disadvantage because your friends most likely aren't playing on Wii U. They're going to be playing on 360 or PS3 unless they're just Nintendo fans like you are. But for most people, that's not going to be the case. And it's already going to take a lot for you to come away from possibly playing with your friends and play on a Nintendo platform. And if it's going to be a shoddy experience, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and some third parties are I think, taking the right approach. Like THQ, they're putting out Darksiders 2, you know, what, 3 months after it's been released, but they're adding content that's not in the other and is not going to be in the other versions.
Right.
And a decent amount of content at that.
Yeah, and all the DLC that's out right now. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a Game of the Year edition with more stuff.
Right.
It's the same thing as Mass Effect 3. All the DLC, I believe, is on disc.
Oh, and Batman's the same way.
Yeah.
And you also get those stupid costumes.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. And then Ubisoft is certainly hedging their bets, you know, with the Wii U. I mean, Rayman coming out exclusively for the console, at least for the time being. And they've just been really behind Nintendo at this point.
Zombie U's a launch game.
Assassin's Creed right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So that stuff's cool. But yeah, I'm okay as long as the online infrastructure is there for third party games. That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't need Nintendo Land to be playable online. I mean, I'll have plenty of fun playing that with friends in my living room.
Sure.
That's not something I need on mine. You know, Pikmin's still down the road, so who knows? That does seem like a game that could benefit from being able to play with people online. So
I mean,
we'll
maybe that's
that,
why
but
it's coming out so late. Well, now, that so be. Late,
but later.
5 months
later.
Into the launch.
Yeah, that would be cool. So I'm fine if Nintendo, as a first-party developer, doesn't want to utilize the online stuff yet, if they want to focus on Miiverse, but it just has to be in place for third parties.
Yeah.
And I think it will be. We'll see. But
cool.
It sounds like it will be. So, let's read another quote here that we got. Is this one off Facebook then?
This one was Facebook, yes.
Okay. How will Nintendo TV connect to my pre-existing cable box? I assume it won't be a cord, but wirelessly. This is by
Patricius McNulty.
Sweet name.
Is that a real name?
I doubt it.
Okay. If it is, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that's your name.
You know, for as much time as they spent on Nintendo TV at the conference, I'm surprised they didn't have at least a throwaway line about how this might work.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, my cable is not wireless. It connects to the wall with this giant black cord. And then it connects to my TV with another cord. So I do question how the Wii U is going to work with that. Will it have a giant screw in the back of it?
Right. Most likely not.
I think it's going to do it is when you turn on Nintendo TV, you're going to set it up with your your account. Probably your cable provider. You can set up the Wii gamepad as a infrared remote for your TV and the cable box itself.
Now that's exciting. I like that idea.
And then
idea of TV.
Yeah. I just feel like you'll be able to select stuff and it'll just do everything, like change your TV's input and change to the channel.
You think the gamepad's going to basically be just a universal remote?
Yeah, I think that's all it's doing.
You press a button and you can adjust the volume on your sound system, then you can just input on your TV.
They set your
VCR to record.
Up on the site, we have an interview, or they did a walkthrough, and the guy talked about how it can be used as a universal remote, basically.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, that would be cool.
He pointed out how it can be connected to your cable box and your TV to change stuff like that.
Right. That's but like cool. You said, the Wii U still needs to recognize the content coming in through the cable box. Right,
And so I think it's going to do it over the internet. Like, it's going to
pull
from some type of guide or something provider's website.
Yeah. And see, that's what makes me curious about how it will work with – I mean, if you have, basic cable, I don't know if this is the kind of – if you'll be able to use it. But I know, if you've got a more deluxe cable package, I mean, you do have – login information, you do have an account number. I mean, you have this kind of stuff that you can probably enter, and then, like you said, it just pulls from there.
Yeah.
And instead of feeding to your TV, it just feeds through your Wii U, like you said, online. Yeah, it's cool. It's ambitious. I mean, I really like it. But I don't think there'll be any sort of cord. I'm sure we'll all work through the internet.
Yeah.
You're not gonna plug in screw in a coaxial cable to the back of your Wii U. Though that would be pretty amazing.
That'd be pretty funny. So let me ask you guys. I know what version you're getting, Scott, but Patrick, are you getting this on day one? And if so, which version?
Day one and the deluxe, of course.
Nice. I am also hopefully going to be day one and deluxe. I don't really want Nintendo Land, but I do want 32 gigs of memory, and I want the black system.
This and makes me think of something else. The 32 gigs, that isn't that much storage.
No, it's really
honestly.
Not.
Well, they just announced a new PS3 model that's going to launch, I think, as early as tomorrow. And yeah, it's 500 gigs.
They said that external drives are going to work with the system, but how are they going to work with the system? Or did we talk about this last week?
I'm sure.
I don't think we talked about it last week.
Like, are we going to have to be switching content back and forth between your system?
Maybe.
Maybe you did mention that last week, actually. That sounds familiar. Okay. I hope not.
Can launch from the drive.
Yeah, I think
that's what I want.
I think so. I think if they're to the point where they're telling you right now that you'll be able to hook hard drives up to it, I think you'll be able to boot from it. You know, it's not like the SD card with the Wii and kind of how botched that was for a while. Yeah. And it took 2 or 3 years before they finally let you save things to it and then boot from it, which was such a mess.
I just think about the PS3 where you can't boot games from an external drive on the PS3, I believe.
Can you not?
Really?
I don't think you can.
Because I'm running out of room and I've been considering an external drive.
Huh.
It's something I have to look into, but I think last time I read about it, I don't think you could. And you have to just do that. Clean out your PS3 and put stuff back on it.
Well, the old fridge.
Then that's what's the point of having a drive?
I guess so you can have stuff right there and then you can just transfer it over. You don't have to re-download it every time, which would be faster, but it's still not as fast as just pressing start.
Yeah. No, I may be wrong about that, but
I know 360 is very restrictive about that. I know you can't do it with 360. Yeah.
It's just something I worry about with the Wii U because it's only 32 gigs.
I mean, that is such a small amount. It really
especially
is.
Considering the discs are 25 gigs.
How big? Well, nobody's going to use 25 gigs.
Oh, yeah, but...
How big do SD cards get these days?
I have a 32 gig in my 3DS.
And they're certainly bigger than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, I guess you're right. It's still going to run out of space eventually, especially if people embrace the shiny digital future.
Yeah, well, Nintendo seems to be gearing up to, you know, provide a lot of their software through download. So you'd have to think that they have to come up with some kind of solution. Yeah, I was really surprised with the hard drive sizes. But at least we know a hard drive size. With the Wii, they were always so cryptic about it. I mean, you could figure it out. Yeah, but it was just like such a mess. Yeah.
I think they'll retain that block system.
You think so? I mean, I guess it's on the 3DS.
Yeah, they did with the 3DS, so why not?
Yeah, you're right.
I don't like that.
Has anyone figured out the conversion?
I think so.
I think they know it.
You can find it online, yeah.
Okay.
But that's worse than Microsoft points. I'd rather buy things in points than download them in blocks.
Yeah, I would too. I like
you just like do it, and it's like you have 6,800 blocks left, and it's like, that's great. I don't know what that means.
I guess that's good.
Yeah, who knows?
So how are you guys getting your Wii U's?
I pre-ordered mine from GameStop, a local GameStop. I went the day they were announced. I had no problem. I know people, as soon as the day after the conference, were having people, you know, GameStop representatives tell them that, you know, we're getting a lot of pre-orders on these. We can't necessarily guarantee that if your system is going to be here day one and that kind of stuff. But when I pre-ordered mine, no issue. So I'm hoping that's the case. And I'll line up early at GameStop.
I went to GameStop as well. It was like 4 o'clock that Friday, so it was a full 24 hours after the conference. And they allowed me to pre-order, and I asked the guy before I left if they were going to be cutting them off soon. And he said yes, very soon. And when I got home, it was about 3 hours later that that news started going around that GameStop had completely shut down their pre-orders.
Did they make you prove that you were a worthy customer or whatever the hell Andy had to go through?
I may have proved myself when he started showing me the list of games I could pre-order, and I pulled out a list out of my pocket.
Just hand him your business card. Don't you know who I am?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And so, Zach, you're not going to pre-order. You're just going to go stand in line at your local
Brent
store.
Meyer,
huh?
I'm going to try and relive the magic of 2006 and sit outside in the freezing goddamn cold and be the first in line.
I hear all these launch stories for the Wii, especially yours, but other people too who waited in line through the cold and stuff and were out all night. I pre-ordered mine from a GameStop probably like a week before the Wii was supposed to come out, and then I just rolled up Sunday morning when the GameStop opened, and there were about 7 people there who had reserved it, and I just got my Wii and got Zelda and Rayman and left, and I think I was there a total of 15 minutes.
Wow.
Do you think they're going to do a midnight release for the Wii U?
I think so. I think that just wasn't as popular at the time in 2006. I'm sure they were doing it, but I don't know if it was as widespread as it is now. So yeah, sure. I mean, they do fucking midnight launches for just nonsense.
They do it for midnight Call of Duty here. I mean, Fred Meyer will do a midnight launch for friggin' Call of Duty. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're definitely going to be doing a midnight launch, but for the Wii, I had actually pre-ordered it at a local game store whose name I don't recall, but they called me about, like, I'm not even kidding, 2 days before launch, and they were like, we're not getting enough, and your name is too far down the list. I was like, oh, okay. So that's when I determined I'm going to have to go stand outside Fred Meyer. Yeah. And this year, I learned my lesson from 5 years ago, and I'm taking a propane heater. Because I had all my Arctic gear on. I had, you know, gloves. I could barely move. But it was negative 22 at midnight. And if you're not moving around, you're going to get cold.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing a propane heater this time.
That's crazy.
You should go the whole nine yards and bring, like, a tent and sleeping bag.
I've thought about it. Tents are kind of a bitch to put up, but I've considered it.
That would be awesome.
Get a propane heater up in that tent. And, dude, when I bought my Wii, that was so cool. I was the first in line, and I went in and bought it, and I bought Twilight Princess and I think an extra controller, maybe. But when I was leaving, the line was, you know, inside Fred Meyer now, but everybody clapped. Everybody was like a huge applause, and I held the Wii up. I was like, yeah, and it was like feeling like a rock star. And then I went home and collapsed to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the trouble. Scott, are you going to go wait in line for the Wii U?
I probably will. Like I said, I have it reserved, but just in case, you know, there's any problem with shortages, I'll probably go. I don't know that I'm going to go like hours ahead of time, but I'm sure there'll be a midnight launch, so I'll probably roll up there like 10:30 or 11.
I'm thinking about going and just waiting for the experience. Me and my friend pre-ordered at the same location. So mm-hmm.
Are either of your GameStops in a mall?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, that could be trouble.
Yeah. Patrick, yeah, I assume it's going to get cold where you live.
Probably it'll probably go down to 30 degrees overnight.
Yeah, right. How about you, Scott? It's going to be cold.
It can be. I mean,
it may be colder. I don't know.
I live just outside of Chicago, so it can be like hit or miss. It could very well be 40 degrees at night. It could honestly drop below, you know, negative 15
That's
or
true.
Something. It's just impossible. It's so unpredictable out here.
I mean, last year there was a day where it like just got crazy and it like blizzard and it was just nuts and the temperature was all over the place.
The high today was like 72 and tonight it's supposed to drop down to like in the mid 30s. So
oh, wow.
The high today
yeah.
was 51. It's pouring rain and it looks like the trees are going to snap in half. It's so windy.
Oh, Alaska.
Mm.
So yeah, I guess we'll kind of wrap this up. I'll say this. I know there's some things we don't know about the Wii U, but to me, if you're a Nintendo fan, which if I follow you on Twitter, like from the site, you more than likely are. And I've heard people complain that, you know, well, now they're going to wait. They're not going to get it because there's just so much unknown or nothing right now really moves them. And I mean, unless money is really an issue and like you just could use that money to pay your rent or something. I mean, I understand that, but like if there's no reason why you can't like financially get the system right now, I just don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, even if this launch lineup doesn't wow you, I mean, it's just new hardware. It's going to be so much fun to play with and yeah. to get in on that ground floor. And you don't know when you're going to be able to find one again. And there's just things are going to be coming out. You know, I mean, it's
we
continuously.
Will get what am I trying to say? God willing, we will get a better Metroid game.
Yeah. Well, there were a handful of Metroid games on the Wii, actually.
There were.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. I know which one you're referring to. yes. But yeah, I just don't see that negativity. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm just excited to play around with it, and I think it's going to be pretty cool. And I mean, there's no launch games that are like must-haves for me necessarily, you know, the way that the Wii launched with the new Zelda. It's like, well, you got to play a new Zelda. You know, I'm excited about Mario and Rayman and stuff, but still, I mean, it's just going to be a fun experience, I think. Yeah. And you just know things are in the pipeline. I mean, it's not like they're going to go a whole generation without releasing the games you want to play. So
yeah.
I just don't get that negativity.
If people are worried about there not being any retail games they're interested in, just look at the eShop. All the different content they have on there, and that's probably going to be coming out all through December and January, all the stuff they have announced currently.
Yeah.
And that's probably every single week there's going to most likely be something new that you want to play, so all the more reason to go get it.
Yeah. I'm excited. I was initially dismissive, but the more about it I read, the more excited I got.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I really can't wait. November's going to be a pretty rad month. My birthday's in November.
So is mine. What day
look
is
at
yours?
That. You the both 20, are lucky. The 27th.
Oh, mine's the 24th.
Whoa.
Creepy.
That's
awesome.
How
old are
you
going to
be? Yeah, that's good. I will be 27.
Okay, I'll be 30.
Ah, a few years ahead.
Old man.
Patrick, how old will you be this year?
May 29th, I will be 20.
That's
right.
Crazy. Crazy as shit. Patrick, when you turn 21, we're going to all fly to you.
We're going to PAX.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, PAX will be right then. Yeah. Get you nice and drunk so you can be hungover for like the show floor the next day. That'll be great.
Excellent.
All right, everyone. Well, I guess that will do it for our Wii U What We Don't Know segment. So, Zach, Patrick, thanks for being here.
Yep.
Wouldn't have missed it.
And yeah, we'll talk to you guys later.
Yep. See ya.
Bye. Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and today I'm joined by Nate Andrews.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Animal Crossing. Not the new upcoming 3DS Animal Crossing or anything fancy like that, just the original no-frills GameCube Animal Crossing. Well, I don't know. It's probably been almost a month now. We wrote a feature and posted it to the site about playing Animal Crossing via the Dolphin emulator and Dropbox, which allowed us to share a virtual memory card and play in a town together, even though we were, you know, states apart from each other. Nate actually discovered the idea while, I guess, just browsing the web as he does.
Mm-hmm.
And
pretty much,
we thought it might be kind of cool to try, and so we did, and the setup worked perfectly. All we had was just, we each had the Dolphin emulator, which you can download for free, and then we each had a ISO of the game, which, you know.
You can download for free?
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, you can buy the game and then make a copy of it.
You should really
stuff.
Buy the game anyway.
Because... That's probably what you should do. You can probably find it really cheap now somewhere.
Actually, I just bought, Animal Crossing Wild World for the DS.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was kind of missing playing on the emulator, so I figured I would get it to go.
Oh, okay, well, there you go. So look at that. You emulated the game, but it sold you on the series, so it got you to purchase a game.
Well,
I
had bought the GameCube game a long time ago, too. But...
Oh, okay. Well, you were already familiar with it. Oh, that's right. You'd played it before. I'm the newbie here.
That's right. You're the pirate.
Yeah, I am. You're absolutely right. And, then we just set up a Dropbox and a shared memory card that sat in that Dropbox. So we had to make sure, though, only one of us was using it at a time or the save files wouldn't match up. And
I don't think that was a big problem.
That would be trouble. Yeah, no, it wasn't at all, especially as time went on because I played much, much less, as you probably noticed. Animal Crossing. I mean, I had never played it in any iteration. I wrote in that post that we had on the site detailing how we set everything up that I'd seen my cousin play it a handful of times, and it kind of just – it didn't interest me. I mean, at this point, I was probably, like, in high school. I was probably maybe a sophomore or junior. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, the idea of just playing a game where I'm, like, sending mail to virtual people and, like, I don't know, planting trees just didn't really, like – didn't really do anything for me.
So you do kind of touch on that in the post, but what was your opinion of it? Was it anything beyond that or just total disinterest
then or now?
Both, I guess.
Well, yeah, then it just, like, you know, not that I was necessarily like everything had to be action, like I've never been like a Call of Duty type gamer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just, you know, it just didn't really interest me in any way. What did was the possibility of playing in the same town with someone, like playing with you, where we could see the different things we're doing to the world and, you know, how it's affected. That was pretty cool, but I really wouldn't have been able to do that. I mean, I guess with my cousin, we could have, like, swapped GameCube saves or, you know, transferred save files over from memory cards, but that was a bit more elaborate than I think we were willing to do. And there was no one in my household or, like, friends nearby, because my cousin lived, like, a few cities over. So
even when I had, or when I played the GameCube game, I never was able to do something like that.
Right.
So I didn't have that experience.
Exactly. So, like, I don't know. There was just nothing in it pulled me, you know? It just didn't look interesting. I know people liked it, but it just didn't look like something I wanted to do with my time. And I feel like now that I've played it, I think if I would have played it back then, I would have actually really liked it because I had so much free time. It's really well written. And there's actually a good variety of things to do. And, you know, there were some novel things then that aren't as meaningful now because of things like the Virtual Console. But, you know, just the fact, like, finding the NES games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And those things, there's a lot of nice touches. And the writing really is, like, incredibly sharp. A lot of, like, little nods to Nintendo franchises and just Nintendo history. It's really, really well done. So I enjoyed that playing it now. But at this point, I mean, I work and I go to school and I have a baby now. And it's like, my gaming time is so limited. It's like I can probably play like an hour a night, maybe an hour or two every other night, just depending on what's going on after the baby's asleep. So it's like, and there's a lot I'm trying to play right now. Like I'm still trying to get through Xenoblade and stuff like that. I started playing Demon's Souls.
Oh, no.
And yeah, I know. So it's like I had to get this limited amount to play games. It's like, well, do I want to like go on these epic battles where I'm like killing demons and saving the world?
Or
like,
you know, do you want to pull weeds and tend to a house?
Exactly. And so unfortunately, Animal Crossing a lot of the times still didn't win out.
Yeah. That's kind of my situation, too.
Oh, really?
Without the baby, you know, but I still ended up like having not very much time to play.
Okay, because you probably still put in much more time than I did.
I did, yeah. After a while.
But see, that's the thing. That's why I almost do wish I would have... I wish I would have played it back then, but had the ability to play with friends in the same town. Because I did enjoy that aspect. Like, one of my favorite things I did was the very first moment where I could set my message that my little, like, tree stub or whatever outside my house would, like, display to people was, you know, I said everyone was welcome in my house except for Tom Nook and Nate.
Right.
And I just planted that and just waited for you to find it. And then after a few days, you did find it. And
then I just went in your house anyway.
So my stub security system did not work.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that was fun. There's lots of neat little things like that, and I did like decorating the house and seeing how your house would change with time as you got further in the game and unlocked other things. And so that was cool, and you know, the town layout was, you know, it was a nice little layout. I could see how that game could pull someone in. It was just really, really bad timing for me in terms of just other games I want to play and the amount of time I get to spend playing games.
Yeah, it's weird in that way that it can be so engaging in one aspect, but when you don't have time for it, it's just like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right, and see, when I'd force myself to play, I would actually end up having fun, and I would like sink a good like hour and a half into it, and I enjoyed that. But for whatever reason, there was just that hurdle where it was like I just could not convince myself to turn it on.
At a certain point, it's work. It's busy work, and it's designed not to look like busy work, but that's pretty much what it is.
Right. And now I'm sure there's some like psychological argument we can make that's like, well, in the end, really, what are we doing between games? I mean, we're just pressing buttons. You know, we have controllers in our hands, and we just press buttons on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then just what happens on the screen is different. So I press A, and I pull a weed, or I press A, and like I, you know, use a special attack to kill some fucking monster. You know, and it's like, well, it's the same input, but the output's different.
Right.
So yeah, I had a harder time convincing myself to go like, yeah, clean up some town rather than, yeah, save the universe.
There's a lot of weird psychology in the game. Like, you can write letters to other townspeople to, like, there are, like, certain keywords that you can use to make them give you items and things like that. But it's really weird, especially if you play by yourself and you're not interacting with another human character. You're just kind of
right.
Sending those things out to a computer.
Right, exactly. And it tries, AI, it kind of just try to trick you into thinking these are like real living people in that way. Yeah,
and it makes up for it for, you know, like you said, the way it's written and the characters and the style and everything.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. It would be interesting to go back now and play it as an entirely single player experience and see like if it had the same draw to me. Because like I said, the biggest draw was just wanting to like do things to interact with you or seeing like how you were progressing. So,
mm-hmm.
It did. That format, though, of being able to play in a town with people who you don't actually like live physically near in the real world, I think is interesting. Do you know the Wii version? You could visit other people's towns in the Wii version,
I've never
right?
played the Wii version, but that was one of the things that you could do. There was the hub. There was some sort of mall hub, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could visit other people's towns and stuff like that. So it is progressing
okay.
bit by bit in that aspect.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Which is what I'd actually like to see, like, you know, on the 3DS game, if I could just jump into somebody's town randomly and do something with them. I think that'd be a lot more interesting.
Yeah, and, like, play together at the same time
right.
And do things. And, yeah, if there were, like, certain tasks within the town that you could only do with, like, two or more people. Yeah, that would be super interesting. And hopefully they're going that route. I really don't know much about the 3DS one. Does anyone know much about the 3DS one? Do we know much information about it?
There are some images, and I think there's a subtitle.
Okay.
And there's not much else.
Okay, well, there you go.
Hopefully that will change soon, but it's also not coming out here until next year.
Now, I will say that the idea of playing it in handheld fashion does intrigue me a bit more.
Yeah, which is why I bought the DS version.
Because I know you're in school and like probably like around campus, do you find yourself playing it?
Yeah, I had it with me today. I played a little bit during some downtime, and it's a lot easier to jump in and out. You can save. You don't have to go back to your house to save. You can just hit a button and jump out.
Oh, cool. Do you get a map, or do you have to still go to
the
town board?
No, you do have a map.
That's good. That's one thing that was always like, oh, shit, where is that person? And then I have to, like, go look at the map to see, like, the grid and figure it all out. You kind of learn the landmarks with time, but mm-hmm. it was still kind of a hassle.
yeah, I think it's definitely better suited to that format.
Yeah, for sure. Because this is something I could definitely say, see getting on the 3DS just to play, like, when I'm at school, like you said. Mm-hmm. And then even times where I can't, like, play video games on the TV, but I can sit there with my 3DS out, like, while my girlfriend's watching TV or something. You know, we've only got the one TV, so... Mm-hmm. But if I can be playing on my 3DS, then that's huge. And like you said, I think that this type of game fits that that platform quite well. Mm-hmm. Just drop in for 10 minutes, do something, and then just turn it off and move on with what you're doing. Your commute's over or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does kind of surprise me that the game has done as well as it has, being specifically on console mostly.
That's true. Yeah, that's real true. I mean, like I said, I know this game was popular on the GameCube. And I mean, my cousin, who was a few years older than me, was in college at the time. I mean, he was playing it. And that's why, like, just seeing him play it, like, blew my mind. I mean, I thought, like, it was going to be something more than just doing chores, which in a way it is. But
yeah, it's a routine that's a little bit more fun than your own.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because you're some kind of weird dog or whatever.
You're a human.
You're a human. Everyone else is animal.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's totally surreal.
But yeah, especially a game that started as an N64 game Japan and then came as a GameCube game. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you have any other thoughts about it? Any other maybe interesting
happenstance? I'm a little bit curious as to what your play style was, like what you would do on any given, you know, turn in the game.
Well, see, I didn't get real far into it. So for the most part, I just did what Tom Nook told me to do.
Right.
So I did a lot of that, just trying to complete tasks and build up money. And I never actually got enough money to, like, buy out my house or whatever.
Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't get to that point. Did you?
I did, yeah. I passed the first benchmark for that.
How long did that take you?
If you're really into it and you know what you're doing, it doesn't take very long. Like, you could probably do it in couple hours or like a week's worth of playing.
Okay.
It's just like gather and sell.
Exactly.
Pay it off every day.
Right. So yeah, so I that's mostly what my play experience was just like doing those little fetch quests, basically, is what they mostly were. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. And then I enjoyed kind of going around the town, you know, finding stuff, picking up stuff, even though like I couldn't use it yet. Just I saw something on the ground, I'd grab it. And like I said, I liked leaving notes for you and sending mail and that kind of stuff. That was cool.
Did you ever get, like a shovel or anything like that?
Yeah. I think I got the shovel. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like the axe, you can start making some cosmetic changes to the town.
Yeah. And that stuff's cool.
Yeah.
I like that. See, that's the point I wanted to get to, but
you know,
I guess
you can start planting trees and start living in there a little bit more.
Exactly, and that's the point I wanted to get to, but like didn't fully get into. It was the point where, yeah, I could just mess with the town. I mean, that was my end goal. I just wanted to do things to the town where you'd log in and just like be completely shocked and like not know what I was doing, like just plant a tree in front of your doorway or something. Uh-huh. I don't think I could do that, but
no, you can't. But
something like that, try to box you in some way.
I think I planted a pitfall near your house, but
okay, yeah. See, I never triggered it.
Yeah, but I probably fell in it.
So yeah, that's the stuff I wanted to do, but just never invested enough time to get to be able to fully do.
Yeah, there is a certain hurdle that you have to get over to kind of get to that spot.
Right. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to do. Now, what about the DS one? Was it the same format where when you start, you're in debt and you kind of have to unlock things as you go?
Only a couple hours in, but it's pretty much that same format.
Okay. And yeah, I imagine that's basically just how it works throughout.
Right, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's always those gates you have to get through first before everything's just open to you. Mm-hmm. Which, I think it'd be cool if 3DS one didn't do that, and it did encourage more, like, playing with other people.
Yeah, I wish it was a little more, you know, open. But
right, like, everything's there, and it's just all about what you do within that community.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, did you have anything else?
No, not really.
Okay.
I think it's a fun game, if you're up for that kind of thing. If you don't mind, like, checking in every day, and I think that's the best way to get the most out of it.
Yeah, as you do, you have to, like, just not log in. I was gonna say log in, not really logging in, but yeah, go into the game every day, do a little bit, get out, and then, yeah, just repeat that, and you get into that routine where, you know, it just becomes natural. And every day you do make a little bit of progress towards what I don't know. There's really, I don't know if there's really any end goal, but I guess it's what's kind of cool
whatever,
about the
it's
game.
It's really whatever you want it to be.
Exactly, which is kind
what
of cool.
What you put in is what you get out.
Right, and that's pretty cool. And yeah, for anyone who's interested, I mean, we do have the post on NWR. It's been a little while now. I guess if you click features, you can find it. Do you remember what we titled it?
It's titled Neighbors in Namforth, Part 1.
Yes. Yeah, part 1.
Part 1 of 1.
Yes, exactly. Yes, this was going to be some elaborate written out feature, but then I guess neither of us thought we could turn it into a big elaborate feature. So why not just talk about it?
The game beat us.
That's easier. Yes. Damn it, Tom Nook. But yeah, you can find that, and we kind of detail how we set everything up if you're interested in, you know, getting your own game going with some of your friends. I write in there how to be able to use the classic controller to play GameCube games, and how to use the classic controller just to be a PC gamepad, which was pretty cool. I figured out how to do that. So, yeah. And you know, if you're curious, you've never played the series, I would encourage you to check it out, and maybe like me, you'll be much more interested in the 3DS one than you might have been, beforehand. I do have a newfound like sort of respect for the series, even if this particular game didn't move me, you know, in a real positive way. But yeah, all right. Well, did you have any closing words, Nate?
I think an Animal Crossing MMO would be kind of cool. You mentioned logging in.
Yeah, where it's like one progressive world, and you can go between town to town and. I imagine it for some reason. I imagine like Earthbound, where it's these towns and there's like little highways, like you know that you just like walk across,
right, yeah.
And then you get into the next town. For some reason, that
or you
would
just
be kind of cool.
Train or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You would skip
it'll
back.
Never happen, but
it no, it never. It never will. Yeah, like maybe there'd be
this
stuff
is probably the closest that we'll get.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right. Well, thank you for being here, Nate, and talking about an old game with me. And thank you, the listener, for listening, and we'll be back.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any listener mail questions, you can send them to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and please rate and review us on iTunes. Now, if you're interested, we have a bonus segment coming up all about Doctor Who with Patrick and Scott. Geronimo.
This bonus segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. And I'm joined by Patrick Barnett.
Geronimo.
Yes, very good. And we're going to be talking about Doctor Who this most recent season. There's been delays every week, so at first it was supposed to be, well, let's just talk about the season premiere, where we think the season's going. Then it was, okay, let's talk about the first two episodes. And now it's, let's talk about the first three episodes, or I guess halfway through this first half of the season, as it will be.
Certainly more to talk about than
we finally
anticipated.
Yeah, exactly. So we've finally gotten together here, and we're going to talk a little bit about each episode and kind of where we think the final three episodes here will go, the departure of Amy and Rory and all that good stuff. But let's just start with the episodes in order. So first up was The Asylum of the Daleks, which I thought was a really great episode. And what, in my opinion, one of the better season openers.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the strongest season openers they've had in a while.
Now, the one glaring exception is obviously last seasons with the astronaut and all that stuff and the kind of the mystery around that and the silence.
Like, that one was good, but there was just so many unanswered questions there, where this one was just like one fully fleshed out episode that you could enjoy from start to finish and like leave this episode not wondering what's going on.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Like,
I guess
last season it started with the doctor got shot and died and you're just like, why? What is happening?
Yeah. That's a good point. It was very like, it was a very like stylish episode and there was a lot going on, but you're right. As far as like coming away with it, it's just watching one episode. It didn't like tell a complete story. Whereas this one apparently seems to have done that for the most part. Yeah. And I've heard interviews with Stephen Moffat. It seems like that's kind of the point with this season. Like each episode needs to kind of stand on its own and be of like movie quality, basically.
I think he said that there's not going to be any 2-part episodes throughout the entire season. I think each one is like its own standalone Hollywoodish experience, basically.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's pretty much what I heard. So, but yeah, it was really good. I didn't really know what to expect going into it. I definitely didn't expect to meet Oswin so soon, who we know, if you follow any Doctor Who news, is supposed to be the next companion.
Yeah. Is it confirmed that her name as a companion is supposed to be Oswin? Because that I didn't know. For some reason I had heard it was going to be like Clara or something like that.
No, I heard Oswin before. Did you hear Oswin before the episode aired? Okay. Yeah.
Maybe I was just out of the loop there on that. But.
Maybe. Yeah, as far as I know, that was supposed to be it. That's why when she said her name, I was like, holy crap, that's her. But I guess we can go through the episode a little bit. So the Doctor, as well as Rory and Amy, are sort of summoned by the Daleks. They're captured by the Daleks and brought to this huge Dalek ship. With just tons and tons of Daleks. I guess I'm kind of confused at this point on the Dalek timeline and how there's so many now.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I went back and watched through again, there'd be some explanation of why there's so many, but that's fine.
I think the last time we saw them, they escaped from the Doctor back in fifth season. He let them go to save the Earth.
Is that the one that was like in like World War II?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess they just rebuilt the Dalek population, I suppose. Because it's just the three of them, right? It was the colored ones?
Yeah, it was like the three or four colored.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, so they're back, like just hundreds and hundreds of Daleks on the ship, and they want the Doctor to go to this basically insane asylum for Daleks. It's a prison planet where insane Daleks are stored because they're crazy, but they don't want to kill their own kind, so they let them just live there. But there's some crazy signal coming from the planet that they don't like, and now they want to blow the planet up. But it's got, like, planetary defenses, so they're sending the Doctor there to shut those down before they can just bombard the planet. Which in no way seems like a win-win situation for the Doctor. Like, I don't know how he... I mean, you know, he always finds a way, but really, what was his, like, plan here? I mean, I guess he didn't have a choice. He's basically forced at gunpoint, you know, if you will.
Gunpoint by, like, 2,000 Daleks.
Yeah. But, yeah, so it was kind of... Going into it, I don't know if he knew what his game plan was going to be, but I guess that's how he usually operates. So
Before you keep going, I think it's probably important to note that Amy and Rory's marriage appears to be like kind of in shambles at this point as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it opened with actually Rory delivering the divorce papers to Amy. Yeah, that's
which basically comes out of nowhere unless you watch the five mini episodes leading up to the season premiere.
Yeah, which I didn't. So yeah, I was the same thing. Like I thought they kind of hinted at it last season in different places, but yeah, it kind of caught me off guard a little bit. But
it definitely felt weird, especially if you hadn't watched the mini episodes before the show.
Right. Yeah, but I was able just to kind of go, okay, well, time's passed, things fell apart, you know, that happened. Yeah, yeah, so,
just take it for granted.
Exactly, yeah, just say, okay.
It's a show about time travel, you have to give it something.
Exactly. So they land on the planet, it turns out there's, like, nanomachines in the air, and it turns people into Daleks, and they've got these, like, special, was it wristbands, right, or, like,
yeah,
watches?
Yeah, they were everyone was wearing a wristband.
Okay, yeah, to protect them from it. At some point, Amy loses hers, so now she's, like, slowly, like, losing her mind. And they just go through the asylum. You see a bunch of crazy dogs just, like, spinning in place and just, like, like talking slowly and weirdly and, like, almost, like, learning how to say exterminate, which was kind of funny.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, sounding it out, which was kind
of
neat.
That was probably one of the better scenes of that episode where the Dalek, it couldn't say exterminate, and it just sounded like eggs, and Rory was just picking up, like, the ball-shaped thing.
Yeah, like, you went, eggs? This is your eggs? Yeah, that was great. So all along, while they're traversing the asylum, someone named Oswin is guiding them along. She's landed there, she's in her ship, and wants the doctor to basically come rescue her, and then they'll, you know, shut down the shields for the planet and then escape. That's all well and good, but as the doctor gets further and further into the asylum, and finally happens upon where Oswin's supposed to be located, he learns that she is in fact Dalek. But apparently was strong enough of mind that she just convinced herself that she wasn't. And she was all chained up and stuff, so I don't know if she was, like, a threat to them or to herself or what. But she was, like, the main Dalek who seemed, like, in restraints compared to everyone else who was just sort of, like, wandering around the asylum.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we have no word of, like really what happened to her, why that happened. I mean, she did crash there and was, it sounds like, was converted. But, yeah, she just has no memory of it. And so, but she helps the doctor shut down the planet shields, and then she also, funny enough, erases the doctor from the Dalek, like, memory bank.
I didn't like this.
Did you not?
No, not really.
I think it kind of carries over the theme that they set upon at the end of last season, which was the doctor, like, basically disappearing, and everyone sort of forgetting about him.
It's just like the doctor built up this reputation with the Daleks. Like, him and the Daleks are basically arch enemies, and now that whole history is just gone.
That's true. That's true. I mean, who's to say that it doesn't come back at some point?
That's
I guess,
true, yeah.
You know, they just develop a new history. I think it opens up some kind of fun avenues where they can have him and the Daleks, like, find each other again, and the Daleks start to discover, like, who he is and, like, what he means to them, and basically, like, how he's going to be their arch enemy. But yeah, I mean, that's something that really, like, changes the dynamic of the show, and not just, I mean, just the lore in general of the show.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, I mean, they are, like, timeless rivals, and now one of them is completely forgotten who
they
the other
is. They just rebooted 50 years of television.
Right. That's so wild. But yeah, and then the planet's destroyed. Oswin seems to be there, and then she tells the doctor, you know, like, don't forget me, or something along those lines, if I remember correctly.
Which I assume he will not, because
she is
going to be a companion.
Yes, yeah, she will pop up later. This is for sure. But yeah, so overall, I thought it was a great episode. I mean, we certainly paraphrased here, but really a strong opener from start to finish. Just interesting, exciting, a lot of little, like, twists along the way, and really sets things up nicely. And it just gets me so excited to see how Oswin does fall into things. I mean, I saw someone say, like, well, wouldn't it be crazy if she's actually a Dalek? You know, like, you see her inside the Dalek as a human, as she is, but she's actually a Dalek companion to the doctor. Like, that would just be crazy. I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll happen. It'd be too hard to work with.
That's true, yeah. The Daleks are already so just goofy looking.
They're not exactly the most maneuverable things either.
Not at all. So, yeah, and then the next episode was sort of highly touted in the trailers and stuff leading up to the start of the season, especially that one sort of, like, throwaway line that cut to the intro, you know, the dinosaurs on a spaceship, obviously kind of in reference to snakes on a plane.
Yes.
And I thought this episode was just okay.
I thought it was the weaker of the three episodes that we have seen so far.
Yeah, I think so. And I was kind of expecting it. Usually with Doctor Who, you kind of get that season opener, which is really strong. And then if not the second episode, but usually by the third or fourth, you do kind of get one of those, like, throwaway episodes that just doesn't really move the plot one way or the other.
Like last season, it was the pirate ship.
Oh, God, I was going to say that. I'm glad you felt the same about it. Yeah, that pirate ship episode was, like, it wasn't terrible. I mean, it's not bad, but it's just, like, It just doesn't do anything, you know. It's just there.
I think initially it was supposed to be later in that season's run, but then they bumped it up earlier because they brought those characters back in A Good Man Goes to War last season.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. And yeah, so that episode was rough. And this was better than that episode, I thought. But like you said, along the same lines where just a throwaway little story. But it does continue the trend of the Doctor completely disappearing. But we'll get to that in a minute, I guess. So the Doctor is in Egypt, and he's hanging out with the Queen of Egypt, whose name Queen I can't Nefertiti. Remember now. Yes, Nefertiti. Thank you. Apparently helped her, you know, in some way or the other. She wants to straight up bone, but he just takes her with him and goes to answer this, like, distress call, I guess, and also brings along this hunter from, like, the late 1800s, I guess. Was he a famous figure, or was he just made up? I couldn't tell.
I think he's just made up.
Okay, that's what
like Wikipedia doesn't have an entry for his name, so we're trusting you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, don't let us down. But yeah, he was like just like complete like pure like machismo and just like kind of a womanizer, and I guess maybe what you'd expect from that time period, just very sure of himself. So kind of a nice contrast to the queen, who was obviously a very strong female. So. And then also picks up Rory and Amy and Rory's dad. And a lot of them go to a spaceship that is like on a crash course with Earth, and they have to get it off its course before it gets so close to Earth, or basically the Earth Defense Force. I don't know what year this is supposed to be, but they're going to launch like missiles at it and just blow it up. And when the Doctor gets there, he finds dinosaurs, and he's very excited about this, which I thought was weird because like he can just go back and see dinosaurs anytime, can he?
That's yeah, he could, but I think the fact that dinosaurs are on a spaceship.
That's true. I guess he did clarify it was very much on a spaceship was what had him.
And especially since he knows it was like the year, whatever it was, like 2000, probably something. Probably.
That's true, and yeah. He should be the only one who can time travel, so that's a good point. Yeah, so someone found dinosaurs. So basically, Filch from Harry Potter, if anyone watches Harry Potter in the movies.
It was quite a Harry Potter reunion.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, because even Rory's dad was the Weasley dad, right?
Yep.
So he's there. He's basically a poacher. He likes to collect things and then sell them for lots of money. And that's what he wants to do with these dinosaurs. He is trying to find the Doctor because he's hurt and he wants the Doctor to help him. Which is another instance of them kind of playing with the name Doctor. It seems like he knows who the Doctor is, but in reality, he just hears the title Doctor and wants him to help make him better.
Yeah.
And he even does like a full like body scan of the Doctor, and it finds no record of who he is, which is, you know, another like reference to the Doctor disappearing. Because he has a scanner that like tells you like how much someone's worth. So I guess if it's worth him the guide to collect them, and there was no record on the Doctor, so. And then, I don't know, this episode, not much happens, I mean.
There's those two robots that I found just completely annoying.
Yeah, they were pretty annoying, you're absolutely right. I just kind of went along, of course the Doctor got away, the bad guy got what was coming to him, you know, that was pretty much it.
I think that's important to note, the Doctor actually kind of killed that guy.
That's true.
Which is something weird that he doesn't do very often.
That's true. I guess he gave him opportunities to try to.
He did. He gave him plenty of chances.
And when he wouldn't, he finally like took the homing beacon that was on the ship and put it on this poacher ship. And so when the missiles started targeting the poacher ship and killed him. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Which is a little unlike the Doctor, which we get a little bit of in the next episode, A Town Called Mercy. This episode I thought was much better than the second one.
Yes.
And just pretty fun to watch. A new setting for the Doctor. I don't know that I've ever seen him in a Western setting.
I mean,
at least not in the modern series anyway.
You could kind of consider last season's opener ish. They were in that
desert.
Well,
I guess that's true. Yeah, I kind of played on that.
If you consider desert Western ish.
Yeah, that's true. I guess somewhat similar.
Yeah.
So the episode opens, and this basically assassin cyborg is killing someone, and another sort of play on the Doctor's name, but he says that there's one left, and it's the Doctor. You know, that's the last person he has to kill. Title credits, of course, roll in, as they often do in the show. They leave you with a little like cliffhanger there, a little like, oh, what? And then the song starts, which I love.
This is a good time to note. Did you notice in the title credits they changed the logo each week?
It changes each week?
The when it pulls up the Doctor Who, the letters are formed of a different like texture. Like the first week, it was like the Dalek like skin type of texture.
Oh wow!
The dinosaurs, it was more
like reptilian kind of.
Yeah, reptilian. And then I forget what it was for A Town Called Mercy, but yeah, that's been changing up each week.
That's awesome. No, I didn't notice that. Yeah. I noticed that the intro was a little different. It looks a little darker now
this year compared to other years, but
yeah, but I didn't notice that.
That last title, Doctor Who, when it pulls up, yeah, it's different.
That's awesome. Wow, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah,
cool. So then the Doctor and Rory and Amy somehow explicably back together. I don't know if they mentioned why they're together again, because at the end of the second episode, he dropped them off at their house and everything seemed to be okay. So I'm not sure about that, but what are you going to do? which I guess maybe this upcoming fourth episode might go into something like that, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But, yeah, they landed in the 1800s, I guess just after the Civil War. Within 5 years of the Civil War anyway, and find this town that's just completely, I don't know, it's almost like a ghost town on the outside. And then they go to a bar where most of the residents seem to be. He announces that he's the Doctor and he's an alien, and then they begin to throw him out of town. Then an alien starts teleporting in, the same cyborg from the beginning, threatens to kill the Doctor. They bring the Doctor back in because the sheriff, or the marshal, I guess, tells them to. And then we find the actual alien Doctor that the cyborg is looking for, who apparently crashed onto there 2 years ago, helped the town recover from cholera, gave them like electricity and heat and all these things, and just seems to be a swell, nice guy.
Yeah.
Until it turns out that he took people from his own race and turned them into killing machines against their will, and then later tried to basically, he says decommission, but I assume that means just kill them after the war that they were involved in was over.
Did they also mention that while they were trying to build the killing machines, they like did so many tests and they probably lost a whole bunch of subjects?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it took them a few tries before they got it right. So yeah, people died too, just in the conversion process.
Just to put more guilt on him.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting. I think it's kind of cool that you get a character like this who's basically got two sides to him. I mean, he's sort of trying to redeem himself now by helping these people and giving them electricity and heat and all these things, but it doesn't like take away what he did do. And I think the Doctor sort of struggles with that throughout this episode. So at first he goes crazy. I mean, he's really mad and he just wants to give this guy to the cyborg, the gunslinger, as they keep calling him in this Western theme. And gets to the point where he actually kicks him out of town so the gunslinger can get him. But then Amy talks some sense into him. And with a great speech. I thought it was all around, it was a really like kind of moving speech that the two of them have. Where she, you know, basically tells him, you know, this is why you can't be alone for so long. This is why you need someone with you, because, you know, you tend to lose it.
That's been a familiar theme before, I think.
Yes.
I think it was back when after Donna left. And there was like those four mini episodes leading up to David Tennant's leaving.
Yeah, it was the one on Mars, right?
Probably. Yeah,
I think the like the Waters of Mars or something. I think is what it was called. And
when he basically rewrites history just because he can.
Right, and then the woman he saves ends up killing herself to set history right. Because she knows she was supposed to die there. Yeah, that is something they touched upon before, and it was kind of cool to bring it back and sets up, you know, the idea of bringing in a new companion. One thing, too, I didn't realize until I read it online, but at some point the Doctor just sort of quips that he's 1,200 years old now, which in the start of last season, he was like 900 years old. And at the end of the season, I think they said he was like a little over 1,000. So
I think he was like 1,100, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's at least had 100 years like just by himself, just traveling, which I guess shows his changing character a little bit here. But Amy talks sense into him. They bring the Doctor back. The gunslinger says, okay, well, you've got till noon tomorrow, and then I'm basically just going to come into town and kill everybody. You know, I've tried to be peaceful about this and let you guys just give him to me. You haven't done it, so I'm going to come in and take care of business. And so I guess, you know, they kind of set up a plan. They're going to try to help this alien Doctor escape, but he decides that he's going to take his own life to end his own suffering and guilt, and to also prevent the gunslinger from having to kill another person, which I thought worked pretty well. So he goes to his ship and he just blows it up. And then he sort of cheesy, but the gunslinger ends up becoming the marshal of the town. And another like kind of play on, you know, the doctor in the beginning of the episode, it opens with this narration from this little girl, like talking about this, this alien who lives forever and how he watched over the town. And, you know, you just think like, okay, she's talking about the doctor because everyone's always talking about the doctor. But then in the end, it's clear that she's actually talking about the gunslinger, the cyborg, who became Marshall and just lived forever watching over the town.
Just sat on his mountain.
Yeah, exactly. And just looked over the town. So I think it's kind of cool that they've really stuck to this theme of like the doctor just off of everyone's radar. Because it does get to a point, I especially felt during the David Tennant years, where like he just becomes so well known. I think that's something they really tried to push in those David Tennant seasons with like Torchwood and stuff and people hunting him down and humans being like completely aware of him and aliens and like that it's just a common occurrence.
Even the past two seasons where like he gets phone calls from people like Winston Churchill just calling him up and
yeah, absolutely. Asking. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like so it does get like to be a bit much. So I do appreciate that they're really sticking with this fact that he's gone, you know, that everyone thinks he's dead and that's just how it is. With the exception of obviously Amy and Rory, who know that he is well and alive.
And probably a few other individuals.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Create problems for him probably in the future.
Yes, yes. So yeah, and then this episode ended with a little trailer for the upcoming episode where it looks like it's entirely focused on Amy and Rory and how their life is changed, or basically how they live these two lives between just regular Amy and Rory when they're at home with their friends and their life when the doctor shows up and just plucks them up to go on some crazy adventure. Because for a while now, they have been on their own. They don't continuously travel with the doctor. They just kind of pick up when he needs them.
Yeah. And they're not very clear on how long those gaps are in between
their
adventures.
Although it does sound like it could be some amount of time, because Amy and Rory, one of them even says, you know, like, we can't keep doing this. Our friends are going to notice that, like, we're not getting as old as they are. Which I don't necessarily know how that works out. I mean, you'd think he'd drop them back off mere minutes after he picks them up, but maybe I guess the doctor's had problems in the past of being precise with where he's landing in time. So maybe he's off a month or a few weeks, maybe it does begin to add up over time, I guess.
I think it's funny that they're more concerned about people worrying about their age, whereas people wouldn't be worried that they're gone for a month.
Yeah, they just travel a lot, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it looks like a neat episode. Patrick, before we started recording, you compared it to the episode. I want to say it was from it had to have been the second season, because Blink was the episode in the third season where they kind of did that, where it was an episode entirely focused on someone outside of the doctor. So it was the second season with that guy who like discovers the doctor and wants to learn everything he can and joins that organization to try to find the doctor, which really was a bad episode, I think.
I mean, it's just different in a way that I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Like I liked Blink. I thought Blink was done well.
Blink's like one of the best episodes,
yeah,
easily.
Like, that's the one, if you want to show the series to someone else, that's the one I always recommend.
Which is so funny because it has such little doctor in it.
Yeah.
But it is funny. But I totally agree with you. It's such a great episode to be like, this is why you need to watch this show.
But yeah, back to this one that's coming out next week. I just think it's going to be slow moving, slow paced, and a lot of it's going to be very story driven. I think preparing for the episode the week after, which is going to be the departure.
Yeah, the departure of Amy and Rory. I agree. This is going to be a very just sort of emotional and just very pinpointed on the two of them and their relationship and their decision to maybe stop traveling with the doctor. But I look forward to it. You know, you never know what you're going to get. But we'll see. But like you said, sort of alluded to, there's not very much doctor in that trailer, so it would make it seem like there's not going to be very much doctor in the episode, which isn't bad, but I do agree that it's going to be sort of a precursor to 2 weeks from now, or I guess a week from now by the time this episode comes up, which seems like the really exciting episode, and that's the Angels Take Manhattan.
I'm kind of sad that that episode's only going to be an hour long. Like, it's an hour long just journey that they also have to deal with the departure.
So. Yeah, you're saying versus like being a two-parter or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With something like that, I wish it was a two-parter. At least like the Christmas specials, those are always like an extra 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
That's true. I guess it depends how much of this upcoming episode really like outlines the departure of Amy and Rory. I mean, this could very well be them making the decision that they're going to stop traveling with the Doctor, and then the episode in Manhattan is, you know, where they say goodbye. But maybe they've already made the decision. But you're right. It's going to be hard to squeeze into an hour. But I'm excited. I'm excited to have the angels back and see what they can do in that setting.
It looks like there's a baby angels, too. I don't know if you remember.
I did. I saw that. Yeah, there's a lot more different kinds. So, and then after that, there'll be one more episode this half season, I think. I believe that's right. And
At Christmas time, it'll be.
What's that?
It'll be at Christmas.
Oh, so will it just be the Christmas special?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Angels Take Manhattan is on September 29th, and then the next one is Oswin's first journey with the Doctor in the Christmas special.
Oh, so that doesn't even come up till Christmas. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, we're flying through this season then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm excited to see how she comes into things. I'm really interested. I love that introduction for her. I just think that was really inventive to bring her in the first episode, have her apparently die, and just see how the Doctor is going to work that out. And how
I think it was really great that they managed to keep it a secret, because that episode had a few pre-screenings around, like, in London and New York.
That's true. Yeah, and I didn't hear anyone online, like, talk about it.
I guess they had asked every single attendee to not let anyone know about it, and it managed to not leak.
Yeah.
Which is really impressive.
That really is. I'm sure if you were looking for it, you could have found it. But it was the kind of thing where just casually on Twitter, you didn't see someone like retweet, you know, oh, Oswin's a Dalek or something, which is really great.
Even the fact that she was in the episode, like no one knew that was even coming. Yeah.
True, yeah. So yeah, so I guess that's so far this season of Doctor Who. I'm excited. It's been good. I'm glad to have it back.
It was a long break between, I guess it was the Christmas special last year. It was the last episode before.
Yeah, and that Christmas special wasn't especially great. So
no, not compared to the year before.
Right, the Christmas Carol one, so much better. So yeah, it's fun to have it back, and I'm definitely looking forward to the next two episodes here. I imagine we'll probably just do another one of these in 2 weeks, because I feel like there'll probably be a lot to talk about. We can take bets now. Patrick, I think you think Amy and Rory will die, correct?
Maybe not die per se, but the angels, they have that ability that they can, like, throw you back to a different part of time and just let you kind of die there. And like, that's their way of death. I think that's going
to
happen.
And you think the Doctor won't be able to find them?
I don't think he will. And I also think that Amy and Rory will be separated somehow. Like, they won't be able to go together.
That's going to be dark.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Moffat, he said that it's going to be emotional and you're going to cry at the end. So. Yeah. I think that's what's got to have to happen to make me cry.
You're right. At least one of them getting sent back. I agree. Yeah, some sort of separation will have to happen. It'll kind of be on the level. I think the only one that's ever been that sad to me is when Rose departed.
Yeah, and then she came back anyway.
But. Well, that's true. She came back. But just her original departure and just how sad it was that you know, she was alive, but she could never travel with the Doctor again. And I think I agree with you. This could be something similar to that. It definitely won't be a happy, cheery ending, that's for sure. So we will see.
Yeah, indeed.
There we go. But that's Patrick and Scott's Doctor Who recap. So if you watch the show and you've got thoughts about the episode so far, leave them in the talkback feed. And if you got some predictions for where you think this half season anyway will go and how Amy and Rory will depart, please leave that as well. Yeah. Other than that, I guess that's it. So for Patrick, this is Scott, and we'll see you guys later.
Yep, see ya.